Me? He looks like one of the gods come down from on high to seduce me. Flames flicker in the lamp above, casting lights and shadows dancing across his features, drawing attention to the way his lashes fan across the tops of his cheeks.
I'm waiting until I've heard the whole list,
he says, eyes trailing down my chest, then to the slit where my towel gaps at the top of my thighs.
What are the rest of my transgressions?
You stranded me before your father. I focus on keeping my breathing deep and even, not wanting to let on how much he affects me. So I guess it is comparable to putting a horse out for slaughter. This sobers him real quick, features hardening at my accusation.
Is that what you think?
Don't belittle me, Aker. He swirls the dark liquid in the cup in his hand, jaw tense.
I understand you're unfamiliar with the ways of my people, and I don't hold that against you. But everyone must stand before the king upon their arrival. It's customary.
Oh, it was wonderful, I say, sarcasm heavy on my tongue. Meeting my match's father, standing alone before all of the royal court who laughed at me for the juvenile use of my gift, all while covered in rotten tomato. He rises to his full height, drinking the remainder of the contents of his glass before setting it on the ledge beside me.
You're right. That wasn't fair.
I lift a shocked eyebrow at his admission.
Nothing about our lives is fair, Jovi,
he says, dark eyes holding mine. The frank honesty in his voice catches me off guard. I guess I just expected... I don't finish the thought, too ashamed by the rest of the sentence to voice it. But he catches it anyway, a smile softening the blow to my ego.
There's not a person in this court or on this earth you're not capable of standing before.
He slides his hand along the window, pretending to trace the reflections of light until he reaches my shoulder, drawing the back of his fingers over the skin without being conspicuous.
How's your hand?
I lift my palm up for him to see the wound scabbing over. He runs a thumb around the pink flesh, then he brings it to his mouth where he licks along the tender area with the flat of his tongue. It sends a bolt of lightning straight down through my stomach and to my core. I dare a glance around us, making sure no one sees their prince doing filthy things with his mouth, but no one seems to notice with Aker's back to the room. He doesn't let go of my hand, trapping it between our bodies as he leans in close, placing his lips next to my ear.
I am a starving man, Jovi. Don't appear without clothes again.
Or what? I say, not recognizing the timbre of my voice. Lips tracing the outer shell of my ear, he tilts his pelvis toward mine, revealing the truth of his arousal.
Or I'll make you finally confront the desire you've been so determined to pretend doesn't exist between us.
I suck in a deep breath, hating the way his words only add fuel to the fire wanting to rage inside me. He pulls far enough back for me to see the same heat mirrored in his gaze.
Better wake up.
Then he swipes the goblet from the window ledge and turns to speak with a man approaching, a pleasant facade back in place, as if the last few moments never happened. I'm grateful for the out, taking swift steps to the massive hall's doors. I don't know where I'm going. The palace is huge, but I don't slow as I find the nearest stairs and take them two at a time. Their dark trim and handrails are nothing like the gold I remember leading to my room. I've just reached the landing when I see a rabbit on the top step. It hops down one, nose turned up as it sniffs the air, before continuing down. I keep moving, taking the first turning I see, and stop dead in my tracks when I spot another rabbit. And another. Three, to be exact. How odd. Stepping over the animals, I look up and see twice as many again. They're multiplying. One hops to me, and I bend to pick it up, cradling the soft animal to my chest and scratching behind its ears. Then it exposes its mouth, revealing long and ghastly fangs, and I drop it. I blink, and I'm somewhere else entirely. A greenhouse covered in snow. Jovi.
A voice calls. I spin toward it and awake from my dream with a start, clutching for a rabbit I'm no longer holding. The room is dark, the oil in the lanterns burned out, and I'm alone. I find the nightgown I had been holding earlier and slide it on. The bed looks much more enticing now, and I slip between the sheets with a heavy sigh. I'm so tired that when the door opens, I don't even move. If someone is here with ill intent, I'll accept my death as a mercy. Or maybe I'm not afraid because I already know who he is by the silhouette of his figure. The tether responds with a dull throb. Unlacing his boots, he kicks them off haphazardly on his way to the bed. My eyes have adjusted enough that I'm able to admire the cut of his body as he strips off his shirt, then his pants, before climbing into the bed wearing only his underwear. I somehow find enough energy to use my voice. This isn't appropriate, I remind him. He reaches for me under the covers, filling my nose with his scent as he pulls me toward him.
I told you, once we reached the palace, I'd sleep where you sleep.
I don't think that's how that was said. He groans into the soft bedding, adjusting the blankets over the both of us.
I'm not going to let gossipers stop me from helping my match get better rest.
He threads his legs through mine and rests his palm on my hip.
I would have been here sooner, but I was hoping to corner my father at dinner regarding the annulment of my betrothal.
I know I should feel bad for sharing a bed with an engaged man, but I can't find it in me. I'm pretty sure I never want to leave this bed.
Ever.
And? His sigh is answer enough.
He never showed. I asked his aid of his whereabouts, but he wasn't forthcoming.
I place my hand over the hard plane on his chest, above his heart. He stills at the touch. It's the first time I've initiated contact of my own accord. There's no hidden agenda or contention underlining my gesture, just a simple desire to feel him. I slide my palm up his chest, running my fingers along the dip of muscle where it meets his shoulder. Slowly, the tension in his body fades as I explore parts of him I've only ever been able to appreciate from afar. He follows my lead, using my unspoken invitation to do his own exploring, hand at my hip gliding over the curve of my waist until he reaches the end of my nightgown. Easing his hand underneath the fabric, he takes a breath at the feel of my bare skin under his palm. There's a slow, agonizing pulse of desire coursing through my body.
I wasn't going to put you in a carriage like a disgraceful secret, he says,
feeling along the small of my back. It's difficult to concentrate on his words when his fingers are alternating between feather-light touches and firm, pressured sweeps along the length of my spine.
My father may wield most of the power, but I have favor with the people. I wanted them to see that I am in favor of you and not ashamed to call you my match.
It feels like my heart is at the base of my throat as I absorb his words. I keep my eyes trained on my hand, avoiding the intensity of his gaze as I drag my fingers along his throat, across the bump of his Adam's apple. I can't disguise the hurt in my voice. They still seemed less than pleased by me riding with you, despite how much they love you, I whisper.
There's not as much in opposition to your return as it looks, he says,
voice vibrating his throat underneath the tips of my fingers.
It's a small and vocal fraction compared to those who welcome your return. Give them time. The fearful will come around.
He's asking for grace for his people. I drag my hand down the center of his chest until I feel the steady beat of his heart under my hand again. Okay. He snakes a hand under my neck, sinking his fingers through the hair at my nape, tugging to angle my head toward his awaiting mouth.
And I'd like to parade my prized horse around a few more times.
I pinch the skin at his side, but all he does is smile as he tilts his head in for a kiss. There's no hesitation on my end as I meet him fully, using the sleep clouding my judgment as an excuse to indulge. At least, that's what I tell myself. Chapter 46.
Bo strides into my room right as Acre finishes pulling on his shirt from the night before.
Ah, so this is what the maidservants were chattering about this morning, she remarks, smile downright mischievous.
He was just leaving,
I say, cringing at the panic in my voice.
Acre's glowing eyes cut to me still lounging in the bed. Even after the night of kissing, followed by the deepest sleep I think I've had in my entire life, my cheeks burn. It only serves to make his smile grow.
Yuck!
She sticks out her tongue while making a nauseating, gagging sound.
Get a room!
Acre is far less amused by his sister's antics.
You're standing in it.
Falling into one of the chairs, she lifts a brow.
Better?
You wouldn't happen to know the whereabouts of our father, would you?
He asks, taking the chair opposite her to put his shoes on.
Not a clue, she says. Haven't seen him since we got back. Thank the gods.
The last line is uttered under her breath. Acre doesn't like her answer, but he fixes a careful smile on his face.
Be good to Jovi today, yeah?
Bo smiles.
I shall take her under my wing.
Although she means it to be a teasingly mild threat, I can see the gratitude in Acre's eyes as he dips a nod to her. He stands and walks to the bed, leaning over with his hands braced on either side of my legs.
Take today to rest. Explore the palace. Eat,
he says, smiling at the low growl emanating from my belly.
Tomorrow morning, I'm taking you down to start training.
He leans close, placing soft lips on mine.
I'm eager to see you with a sword in your hand.
I internally groan at the thought, but let him kiss me anyway.
Is that an innuendo?
Bo asks, face scrunched in disgust. Laughing, I push Acre away with a hand against his chest.
Don't ask questions you won't like the answer to, Bo.
Bo gags again, maybe for real this time, and Acre laughs as he walks to the door. Her eyes don't leave him until the door clicks shut, hiding him from view, and I'm surprised by the worry in her expression when she looks at me. She's quick to blink it away.
Are we staying in bed all day?
As much as I love the prospect, my stomach is all but screaming at me to feed it. Bo waits while I use the bathroom and get dressed. The soft pants and matching blue top fit me to perfection. I find I'm unable to stop myself from running my hands over the fabric. Compared to the rough, simple cuts of fabric from Alaha, it's going to take time to get used to.
Boys?
Bo greets the guards outside my door on our way out.
Take off the rest of the day.
My least favorite of the two glares at me before departing. Bo watches their backs retreat down the hallway before looking at me.
What was that about?
I'm not sure, I say, honestly, but I don't like him.
Me neither. His aura is unpleasant. You should tell Acre.
Why?
They're his men.
She turns and leads us in the opposite direction of how I was escorted to my room last night.
Our father wanted to put a collar on you, but Acre convinced him to let two men in his ranks keep watch over you instead.
A collar? She touches the base of her neck.
A suppressor to dull your magic. Anyone with gifts who isn't part of the palace retinue is required to wear one, but your lack of control worries the regents. They think you're too dangerous without the proper training.
We pass a maidservant exiting one of the other doors lining the hallway. She freezes, bedding pulled in close to her chest and gaze stuck on me as we pass, like she's too scared to move. I'm quick to avert my eyes.
Don't do that,
Bo chides.
Don't cower.
I know that I shouldn't, logically, but I just hate the idea of making anyone uncomfortable. Bo stops, sharp eyes pinning me in place.
Their apprehension toward you isn't your doing, and it's not your problem. Got it?
I'm momentarily stunned by the sharpness and force of her beauty, smiling at the contradiction with her admonishing words. You're paying awfully close attention to my aura. She rolls her eyes, but I spot the grin as we resume our pace.
It's extra loud today.
I don't need to ask what she means, because I can practically see the contentment radiating from me even without the help of magic like Bo's, knowing the cause for my bliss is due the man who slept in my bed last night. Bo takes me down to the kitchen, bypassing the breakfast being served in the dining hall.
full of braggers and tattletales, she says. There's a noticeable unease in the kitchen staff, but they loosen up in Beau's presence. It's obvious they're well acquainted with her, and she inquires about the growing baby bump of one of the scullery maids, which further alleviates the worry in the air. We're served full plates of eggs and sausage and these little flat cakes with a sugar dressing that they call pancakes. A moan escapes my mouth, and they all titter at my reddening cheeks. This is the best thing I've ever eaten, I tell them. Henry, the cook, slaps a rag against the butcher block counter before moving on to his next task.
You've yet to be truly amazed, princess. Just you wait.
I'm only able to finish a quarter of the portion served to me, but they don't seem to find it rude as they clear away my dishes. Next, Beau gives me a tour. We start in the stateroom, the place where the king greeted us upon our arrival. It branches off from there into four quadrants, like a rounded-off square with a massive courtyard in the middle. My room, as I learn, is on the west end of the complex. As we continue to traverse the corridors, I begin to discover that the majority of the palace is unoccupied. Rooms sit fully furnished, but empty. It's nauseatingly wasteful in comparison to the cramped living quarters of Alaha, where people have to live in one room stacked on top of another like fish in a can. Beau explains how the king keeps his closest advisors at court year-round, but most lords and other nobility of Kenta only stay for short periods at a time when needed. Most came when the king sent word of my pending arrival, so the palace is fuller than it's been in decades. We find the majority of the current tenants are congregated along the inner corridor that overlooks the courtyard. Heads turn and watch as we walk past the crowd. We could be vagrants in comparison. Dressed in opulent dresses and silks, the women and men look like they're dressed for a party, not to stroll along the promenade. Even so, I maintain my steady gait, keep my gaze forward, and remind myself of Beau's words. The passageway gives a perfect vantage point from which to spectate as the soldiers train in the courtyard below. The clang of metal and grunts of effort echo up the open palace walls. Set up in different training stations, soldiers perform conditioning and strengthening exercises very similar to the ones we do in Alaha. I scan the soldiers, stopping when I spot Aker standing amongst the fray, watching a sparring match in the center of the courtyard. He leans toward Hallis, commenting on the match, arms folded across the dampened shirt of his chest. His skin is flushed, skin glistening with sweat in the midday sun. I swallow the excess moisture in my mouth. As if he senses me nearby, his eyes rise in my direction, a smile tugging at the corner of his lips when he catches me watching from the veranda. Hallis notices Aker's diverted attention, eyes following to our location, and he also smirks when he spots us. Beau huffs a breath of annoyance.
Men are insufferable creatures, she says, giving them her back. Is there anything else you're interested in seeing?
The library. It's a long walk to the uppermost level. The doors stand open as if inviting lost wanderers and scholars alike to step inside. The smell hits me first, assaulting me with a slightly dusty aroma of ink and paper and worn leather. Books and scrolls line the shelves along the curved walls, drawing the eyes toward the steepled ceiling above.
Good gods, I whisper in awe.
A female voice draws my attention back to the ground.
Don't forget about the bad ones, too.
Smirking over the gold rims of her glasses, the woman stands from behind the circular desk in the center of the space.
Everyone's always muttering about the good gods, but the bad ones are way more interesting.
Beau parks herself on the edge of the desk, metal rope clanging against its wooden top.
If you believe in fairy tales.
I'm a librarian, darling. Of course I do.
They embrace, hugging for a beat before letting go.
Mother, Beau says, meet Jovi, the lost princess of Melee.
Mother, meaning Beau and Aker aren't full siblings.
Jovi, please meet my mother, Greta.
Beau's mother walks to me, reaching for and clasping my hands in hers.
It is my utmost pleasure, she says, placing her forehead against the back of my hands.
It catches me off guard,
and I look to Bo for guidance, but all she does is give a half-shrug in response, not at all surprised by her mother's greeting. "It's nice to meet you, too," I manage to say.
"My apologies,"
Greta says, releasing me and pushing the frames of her glasses up the bridge of her nose.
"I can be a lot. That's why they sequester me in the library."
Bo's voice comes out sardonic. "That's not why."
"Hush,"
Greta spits out of the corner of her mouth. My eyes catch on the necklace at the base of her throat, tortoiseshell and shiny in the light pouring in from the windows above. I realize it's made of Manji stone.
"What can I help you with?"
she asks, eyes bright. I'm not sure, actually. My eyes go back to the book-lined walls. I've only ever read about libraries. Never seen one. This horrifies Greta. Absolutely, profoundly horrifies her.
"Let me give you the grand tour,"
she says, grabbing my hand and pulling me behind her. Bo smiles at her overzealous mother. "She's not big on personal boundaries," she comments as she begins to follow.
"Not true,"
Greta insists, though Bo's face says otherwise. Greta leads us up the staircase that carves a path through the laden bookshelves along the walls. There are landings spread out at regular intervals as the staircase rises around the perimeter of the main floor, designed to be used as quiet sitting spaces or provide access to desks slotted into cleverly designed alcoves in the shelves, so the reader is physically immersed within the library as they simultaneously bury minds in the pages of the books. By the time we reach the top, I'm slightly out of breath. The weeks of travel have done a number on my stamina, and I already know training is going to be a special form of hell in the morning. "So," Greta says, waving her fingers about, "what will it be? Do you prefer mystery, drama, maybe a little romance?" She wiggles her eyebrows at the last suggestion, but none of the categories mentioned are what I'm hoping to find. I'm cautious, and Greta must sense my hesitancy because she becomes more subdued.
"I keep the erotica behind the counter."
Bo rolls her eyes at her mother, but it's all in fun. It's obvious she adores the woman, and now I can see where Bo gets her radiant personality. Laughing, I shake my head. "Maybe another time. I'm looking for information regarding matching bonds." Lifting a brow, Greta's gaze is curious but open.
"I have that."
We take the long way around the top level so Greta can point out particularly interesting book collections, and then descend back down the entire length of the tower. She yanks on a chain near the massive wooden doors at the entrance, sending a rumble of vibration through our feet as they swing closed, knocking some books from their shelves. She pays them no mind as she leads us to her desk, ushering us to its center.
"Here is where we keep the archives."
I'm about to ask where, only seeing half-bound books, and indeed erotica, judging by the illustrated spines, behind the desk, when she pulls a hidden lever under the counter and a portion of the floor slides away. I brace my feet, not wanting to slip into the darkness below. Greta mumbles under her breath as she feels around for something else.
"It's around here somewhere."
Then there's the sound of a match striking before light illuminates the staircase. Greta descends first, followed by myself and Bo. A fraction of the size of the main library, the room is a tiny replica of the one above it, but somehow seems to contain even more books and scrolls. Its confines somehow make it all the more daunting. Greta walks along a shelf inspecting the book spines until she finds the one she's looking for and hands it to me.
"It is very old, so please be delicate and handle everything with care."
"Of course," I tell her. I run my fingers over the embossed leather. Matching and other bonds. It's heavy and twice the size of my primary school textbook in Alaha. "Can I?" I ask, motioning to the desk.
"I would usually not mind, but I'm currently working on something myself. These are my studies here,"
she says, waving a hand over the open texts.
"Anything you would like is yours to borrow, as long as you promise not to tell anyone. Many of these books are forbidden."
She winks at me conspiratorially.
which is my favorite kind. I thank her and ask if she has anything on the history of light wielders. She doesn't ask questions, just simply finds the text on a nearby shelf and hands it to me. I settle on just the two books for now. This should keep me busy for a while. Finding an alcove with a desk in the main library, Beau retrieves a mystery to read as I dive into the weighty book on bonds. I spend the majority of the day scouring for any information I can find about matching bonds, but there's not much that I haven't already learned. Greta sends up lunch sometime around midday. A few stragglers come into the library, but none stay long after discovering my presence. It's almost as if I was gifted with repulsion and light wielding. I'm nearly convinced of it, except the text details that each heir receives only one gift. It also states they receive a single match in their entire lifetime, if they're lucky enough to get one at all, or unlucky, depending on which text I'm reading. It's a collection of discoveries and observations from different periods, written by unknown authors. Some recount stories of matches who are connected at the hip, each not being able to exist without the other nearby. But others speak of the devastation of matches who despised one another and the hardships they inflicted upon those close to them. There's a list of matches from before the war, all of them dead. Sighing, I look up, and golden hair catches my attention from a lower level of the library. It's the girl Acre was standing next to last night. She's somehow even more beautiful in the daylight. The crimson of her dress looks like blood pooling around her ankles. The collar of Manji stones shines as she shifts, her eyes meeting mine from below. She smiles, and I'm so taken aback by the kind gesture I have to remind myself to give the same in return. I say Beau's name to get her attention. Hmm? I motion subtly with my chin. Who's that? Beau looks over the railing, then back at me, a strange sort of look in her eyes. That's Irina. I already know I'm going to hate the answer, but I ask anyway. Who's Irina? The Princess of Strau. My heartbeat fills my ears, and I can feel the reddening of my cheeks as I fight to remain unaffected, but my blood is boiling in my veins. There's no hiding it from Beau. Not with her abilities.
He didn't tell you she was here?
I shake my head. She cusses, then rolls her eyes.
He's an idiot.
I wait until Irina leaves before telling Beau I want to return to my room. Shock and adrenaline begin to morph into unfiltered anger. I want to pick up the old text and throw it off the stairs, but I keep my wits about me and shut the cover with a calm I don't feel. I manage to thank Greta once again, promising to return the book in a few days. After I murder Acre with it. The walk back to my room is silent. I'm sure I scare even more of the staff in my fuming march through the halls, each step more punctuated than the last. I barge into my room, coming up short at the side of my made bed, bedding smooth and the pillows plumped. The clothes I left dirty on the floor have been cleared away. Undoubtedly the maidservant's doing, waiting until I left to clean, but it's the parcel sitting in the center of my bed that grabs my attention most strongly. I look to Beau for an explanation, but she only grins. I pull apart the twine bow on the wrapped parcel to reveal a sketchbook and charcoal pencil, the same as the one Kai's family used to gift me every year. I flip over the note tied to it, air sticking in my lungs at the words scrawled in small, neat penmanship.
Draw me something.
Acre. I throw it down on the bed and march into the bathroom to take a bath. It's the only thing I can think of to calm me down at this point. I turn the spigot, and while I wait for the tub to fill, I focus on breathing through the stinging in my chest. My hands are glowing. Beau leans casually against the doorway, legs crossed at the ankles.
Your heart isn't the only heart you'll break, you know?
I shake my hands, and they dim a little. Are you telling me you predict the future as well as read auras? She smiles.
My mother does.
Chapter 47. By the time Acre walks into my room, it's well into the evening, and my rage has returned with a vengeance.
He's dressed in plain black clothes, hair clean and pushed away from his face. The nose ring has made a return, and I hate the way my heart skips a beat at his appearance. It only serves to further fan the flames of my anger. I finish the braid of my hair with a tie. Beau said you wanted to take me somewhere. He saunters toward me, eyes holding mine in the mirror of the vanity as he leans down to kiss me. I give him my cheek, and a flash of hurt stutters across his face before he's able to mask it.
Everything okay?
He asks, eyes following me as I stand. I tell myself to calm my racing heart, to not let my emotions get the best of me, but the burning sensation in my chest is damn near impossible to ignore.
No,
I say, meeting his gaze head on. Crossing his arms, he leans back against the armoire.
Okay. Care to elaborate on what's changed since this morning?
Irina is here. Understanding registers on his face a moment before he dips his head in a nod.
She is.
That's all you have to say?
I should have told you, yes. But I didn't find out until dinner last night. She came while I was away.
You were in my bed all night, I point out. He cocks his head to the side.
You were already angry with me. Why would I add to the list by bringing up Irina?
Lightning burns down my arm and into my hand, and I sling it at his head. He ducks in time for my surge of power to miss, and it singes the wooden front of the wardrobe, smoke billowing from the impact. Shock turns to fury as Aker levels his gaze on me. Satisfaction fills my veins, knowing he feels an inkling of the fury I've been fighting with all day. I let my power settle in my palm, readying another throw, hand igniting in a yellow glow.
Jovi,
he warns. Ignoring him, I fling the hot ball of light at him again. It's a narrow miss, but it snaps Aker's control and he storms toward me, eyes hard and furious. He grabs me by the wrists, jerking me toward him, subduing me with little to no effort, and it's a reminder of how much stronger and deadlier he is than I am.
Use your magic on me again, and I'll take it as an invitation to do the same.
My hold around his wrist scorches from the magic still burning through me. You can't kill me. You swore a blood oath. His smile is dry as he walks me backward to the edge of the bed. The gold filigree adorning the foot of the frame detaches and wraps around my ankles, causing me to fall onto my butt on the mattress. With ease, he removes the grip I have on his arm and holds mine to the duvet, tying my wrists to my knees with the winding vine of filigree. My chest rises and falls in tight breaths. Bracing closed fists on either side of my thighs, he leans back just enough to examine his work, eyes scoring down my restrained body. My neck and cheeks burn with humiliation, but despite the rage and frustration burning through me, there's an undeniable part of me that enjoys pushing him, eager to see just how far he'd allow his own emotions to take things. I'm pinned to a bed, and we're alone, and there's something about the heat in his eyes that I want to experience on a more primal level. His eyes linger on the tinted skin, lashes flicking up as he meets my gaze directly. There's no mistaking the heat in his eyes.
Let's get something straight,
he says, jaw ticking as his attention falls to my mouth for a brief second.
I will not hurt you.
He darts a look over my bound body.
Ever. Not because of a blood oath I made out of necessity, but because I don't want to.
The last few words send my heart into the base of my throat. Untie me, I demand, voice coming out weaker than I'd like.
No.
He leans in closer, eyes flitting to my mouth again, breaths converging in the space between.
Not until you're ready to be reasonable,
he says. I try to pull away, but he stops me with a hand underneath my jaw. It tilts my head in the perfect angle for him to access my mouth. My lips brush his when I speak. And who determines that? You?
I don't see anyone else in the room.
Teasing a kiss, he places his open mouth against mine, tongue wet against my bottom lip. I squeeze my eyes shut, hoping the lack of sight will dull the desire muddling my brain, but it doesn't work.
If anything, it narrows my focus to the heat of his mouth, the taste of his tongue as I meet it with my own, the groan that vibrates into me when he dips it inside. While the kissing from last night was nice and laced with heat, all of those combined pale in comparison to the desire of this one. I realize he had been holding back as he devours my mouth with his own. I take the opening, sinking my teeth down and nipping the tip of his tongue before he can fully retreat. He jerks back. Touching a finger to his tongue, he inspects the blood on the pad of his finger, eyes snapping to me. Oh, did I hurt you? Condescension drips from my voice, my tone dry as I smile. You should just get over it so we don't ruin the night. He stares at me for a long beat, then turns away, shaking his head. A humorless laugh escapes him as he stares at the ground, contemplating, maybe actually acknowledging his hypocrisy. He waves a hand toward my bound wrists and ankles.
I should have learned my lesson the first time.
The filigree unwinds itself like a snake, slithering across the wooden frame and nestling back into place.
Listen,
he says, face serious when he looks up.
A friend is supposed to meet us in the city.
I'm seething, but his sudden shift in demeanor has me wavering. Frustration still lingers behind his eyes, but whatever plans he's made are important, crucial enough to table the conversation. Moreover, I can't turn down the chance to stretch my legs after being cooped up in the palace for so long, even if it is in the city. I slide from the edge of the bed and retrieve the cloak Beau brought me from the wardrobe. You owe me, I warn, throwing the garment over my shoulders. I attempt to move around him and toward the door, but he steps into my path, stopping and forcing me to look at him.
For what it's worth, I apologize for not telling you as soon as I found out.
His throat bobs as he swallows, guard seemingly falling. Then I'm staring at the acre I've grown to care for after all our time together, the one I've spent countless hours doing nothing yet everything with, before I knew he was my match or knew our futures would forever be intertwined. The man I call my friend stands before me. His movements are careful, slow as he reaches behind me to pull the hood over my hair, tucking my braid behind my shoulder.
I didn't think it was a big deal.
How could you not? A smile quirks at the corner of his mouth like he finds me cute.
I didn't think you'd care,
he says, running a crooked finger along my jaw.
But jealousy looks good on you.
I know my flushed skin gives away more than I'd like, but there's no avoiding it. We don't want to keep your friend waiting. His smile comes out in full force as he moves away into the door. He opens it, eyes locked on me as I walk toward him, and he leans in to whisper in my ear.
We'll finish this conversation later.
My face reddens at the heated insinuation, fighting the smile wanting to pull at the corners of my mouth. But all of those thoughts come to a screaming halt at the pointed gaze I feel coming from the soldier stationed to the right of my door. Acre acknowledges them with a nod, and the soldier snaps his eyes back to a spot above my doorway. As we begin our departure down the hall, I try to convince myself to ignore it, but Beau's insistence that I tell Acre niggles in the back of my mind. I don't like the way the one on the right looks at me, I say, voice low. Acre slows, eyes becoming sharp despite the smile on his face.
Yeah?
He doesn't wait for a response as he pivots in place. He looks at the soldier in question.
You're dismissed.
A moment of shock makes the soldier's jaw drop, but it doesn't take long for righteous indignation to redden his features. His fellow comrade keeps his eyes averted, not wanting to be caught in the crossfire. We're turning to resume our walk when the muttered insult hits our ears.
Fucking brat.
Acre goes stock still, and I know there's nothing I can do to stop whatever is about to happen. Stalking back toward the soldier, Acre says,
Repeat that.
The man struggles to maintain his bluster, face losing all its color as Acre nears. He shakes his head.
I'm sorry.
Before he can finish his apology, Acre lifts a hand and catches a projectile from the soldier's mouth. The soldier howls, hands going to the orifice in question,
sticking his fingers inside. Aker drops the tooth to the polished floor, iron-capped and bloody.
Turn in your uniform and weapons at the infirmary first thing in the morning.
Then Aker looks at the remaining soldier and says,
Find a replacement of your choosing before we get back. I suggest you choose wisely.
The soldier nods with terrified enthusiasm, vacating his position and hurrying down the hall. I lift a brow at Aker, but don't speak as we continue toward the exit. The palace is quiet. The few people we pass are maidservants. They react differently with Aker at my side. Less afraid, more open. I think one girl even smiles at me. A carriage awaits beyond the steps of the front entrance. It's nondescript and black, as are the horses. The coachman greets us with a nod, holding a hand out to help me into the vehicle, but Aker waves him away, ushering me in instead.
To the blacksmith, Harold,
he says.
Thank you.
The man gives him a small bow.
My pleasure, Your Highness.
The inside of the carriage is sleek, wood polished to a shine, seat velvety smooth. There's just enough room for Aker to fold his height into the opposite seat, bracketing my legs with his own.
Brace yourself, Princess,
the coachman yells as he urges the horses forward and we start with a jerk. I take hold of a handle carved into the side of the door. They're much nicer when you're around, I say. Aker scoffs, leaning against the bench in an effort to get comfortable.
Have you already forgotten the incident in the hallway?
Other than him, I clarify. His problem was he was a little too brave.
I once had a commander tell me being brave and being stupid are the same.
He tilts his head in thought.
But that's another reason I want you to come to training in the morning.
For people to see us together?
No,
he says, body swaying with the jumpy movements of the carriage.
To show them who you are, the lost princess of Melee. Being a light wielder doesn't change that.
Why would your people care about who I am?
Our betrothal was considered a dedication to the continued promise to uphold peace since the war ended.
He continues to shuffle to get comfortable in the small space.
We were celebrated.
But that all ended with my abduction, I say. He nods.
Your mother became increasingly hostile, to the point she began accusing the Conclave of conspiring together to abduct you. Said my father was keeping you locked in the dungeons.
He smiles to himself. It's obvious there's a fondness for my mother in his words, a sort of wonder in his eyes, even after all this time.
Almost had me convinced, too. I went and checked to see for myself.
The Conclave?
The leaders of the five territories. They meet once a year in a bid to uphold an accord across the land. Well, not anymore. Ever since your mother closed the border to Melee after killing Osiris, no one has seen her since, and Chris and Ren both quit accepting the invitation.
He holds my stare, eyes dark and seductive in the darkness of the carriage.
Your return is a reminder of a time of peace and prosperity, Jovi, and my people need it.
Chapter 48. Rust and metal fill my nose as soon as we step out of the carriage. It appears we are in the middle of the city, the cobblestone shining in the low light of the lampposts lining the street. Although it's late and there's not a person in sight, Aker keeps close as he escorts me to the stoop of a brick building, slamming the iron knocker against the wooden door. A sign hanging from the eaves reads, Blacksmith. The door opens, revealing a man with dark hair and dark skin, which makes his light eyes all the more prominent. The collar around his neck glows in the dull light. He smiles with all his teeth.
All hail the prince,
he says, bowing his head to Aker. Aker shoves him in the shoulder.
Fuck off, you bastard, and let us in.
The man laughs and swings the door wide, pulling Aker into an embrace.
The food is fresh out of the oven,
he says, eyes curious and on me.
Wells,
Aker says, taking me by the hand.
This is Jovi. Jovi, Wells.
Wells dips his head in greeting.
It's a pleasure to meet you.
He pats Aker on the back.
Olivia is excited to see you. The both of you.
He clarifies. Aker leads me through the door and into an open workshop.
A giant brick fireplace is in the center of the courtyard, and soot covers the dirt ground. The tables are lined with tools and weapons in varying stages of composition. Across the yard, we come to a second entrance, and Aker instructs me to remove my shoes. I follow Wells's lead and place my shoes next to his by the door.
My wife would skin my hide if I tracked muck onto her floor.
It's strange to enter another person's home in bare feet. It feels intimate, but I get what he means. The stone floor of the small entryway is dull, but cleaned to perfection. I slide my hood back and take in the stairway and brass chandelier. The smells of food and spices fill the air.
They're here!
Wells yells upon entry, shutting the door behind us. Aker keeps his hand locked in mine, guiding me forward with a tug. We round the corner and emerge into a dining area. A table large enough to seat 12 fills the space, and a window in the far wall gives a view of the kitchen counter beyond and the small blonde woman behind it. She erupts into a squeal when she sees us, shaking the mittens from her hands and disappearing from view, only to reappear in kitchen entryway.
I wasn't sure what she likes, so I made a little of everything.
Aker is forced to let go of me to hug her.
As long as it's not fish.
I shoot him a scathing glare before pasting on a smile when Olivia looks at me. I'm sure I'll love whatever it is.
No worries,
she says, hands balled into tight fists.
There are no hurt feelings in this house.
I can tell she's struggling to hold herself back from bombarding me with attention, but I kind of want to put her out of her misery, so I make the decision to initiate a hug. She's several inches shorter than me, and I have to hunch for her to reach, but she's practically vibrating when I put my arms around her narrow shoulders.
I'm so happy to see you,
she says, squeezing me. I glance at Aker over her shoulder, and he's all but laughing at my discomfort. Wells rescues me by pulling her away with an arm around her waist.
Liv? Babe? Do you need help in the kitchen?
Oh, that'd be great.
Wells shares a knowing glance with Aker, then winks at me as he follows his wife into the other room. Their hushed voices carry through the open serving window.
Not to overwhelm her.
She hugged me.
Aker smiles, pulling out a chair for me at the end of the table.
She'll grow on you.
He whispers in my ears when I sit. Only visible from the shoulders up, she flits around the kitchen as she gets everything ready, instructing her husband on which dishes need to be served first. I like her, I say, meeting Aker's stare as he takes the seat next to me. She's nice. Which is more than I can say for the majority of the people I've come across since we arrived on land.
Okay,
Wells says, placing an array of laden serving plates in the middle of the table.
We have roasted duck and cabbage, garlic potatoes, and green beans.
Olivia holds up two bottles of wine. And your choice of red or white. Aker stands and takes the bottles from her hands.
You always spoil me, Liv. Thank you.
He pours himself a helping of the red, then fills my glass as well. I pick it up and take a drink, realizing too late that it's terrible and there's no way I'm going to be able to swallow it. I look around at their expectant faces and deposit the liquid back into the glass. They all laugh at my expense. That's terrible, I say, wiping the liquid from my chin. Maybe worse than mead.
Nah,
Wells says, sitting across from Aker.
You're just used to mead. Same goes for wine. It's an acquired taste.
Olivia retrieves another glass and pours an extra helping of the white. I prefer my drink smoother, she says, handing me the spare glass. Try this. I hum my agreement after I take a sip, a very conservative one. Still not great, but better, I agree. Olivia smiles at my honesty. I'm not much of a drinker myself.
That's because you can't handle more than a glass before you start taking your clothes off,
Wells says. She smacks him with the back of her hand, then waves it over the table. Let's eat. My mouth waters at the steaming food as I wait to dish out my servings. Aker cuts and places a portion of duck on my plate, and I can't deny that it chips away at the lingering frustration toward him I'm struggling to hold on to. We're all consumed by digging into our meal, the sound of silverware meeting the porcelain plates filling the space. "Everything is delicious," I say, holding my fork laden with beans. "Do they grow this green?" She smiles at my question. "Usually." "Why?" I shove them in my mouth, savoring the flavor with a shake of my head. "Fresh fruit and vegetables are hard to come by in Alaha," I explain. "They're often dehydrated for preservation." There's an awkward moment where Olivia and Wells send questioning looks at Acre, but it's quickly forgotten as the conversation moves on to other topics, like the commissions Wells has been working on and Olivia's herb garden. They ask about Acre's travels before he set off to find me after the market. I never thought to inquire, but his answer is short.
"I spent the spring in Strau."
It's enough to settle their curiosity, and they move to a more interesting subject, the uncommonly high level of summer storms they've been experiencing. I watch the way they interact, the ease they have with each other, and it makes me miss the comfort of my friends. Kai, or hell, Messer as a freaking bird would be pleasant enough. I wait for a lull in the conversation to speak. "How do you all know each other?" Acre and Wells share a subdued look, but it's Acre who answers.
"Wells was one of the five I left training with."
Understanding dawns as I look back at Wells. He seems mildly surprised by Acre's candid answer, but does a good job of covering it with a pleasant grin.
"I saved his life."
"Bullshit,"
Acre snarks.
"I saved your life."
They go back and forth over their differing opinions, and Olivia shoots me a look that sums up their bickering. Men. It's not until after dinner, when all the plates have been cleared, that the focus of conversation shifts in my direction.
"So, Jovi,"
Wells says, throwing an arm over the back of his wife's chair.
"How've things been since you arrived at the palace?"
I thumb the stem of the wine glass. "Well," I say, glancing at Acre as he leans back, with an ankle relaxed over a knee. "It's different, as many things are on land." "I imagine it's a bit of a culture shock," Olivia says, leaning against Wells' side. I tilt my head. If we're putting it politely.
"The welcome home didn't help,"
Acre says. Wells waves a dismissive hand.
"Your father has hunted down every last one of the insiders. They're hanging on the wall as we speak, so I doubt you'll have any more issues with naysayers."
I choke on my wine. On the wall? Does he mean... Surely not. Acre shifts in his seat, eyes sliding to me.
"What is it?"
Wells asks, sensing the tension.
"I didn't want to say anything until I spoke to my father, but his whereabouts are unknown at the moment."
Leaning forward, Acre deposits his glass on the table, then turns his head to look at me. There's something unspoken in the gaze before he looks back at them.
"Jovi and I are matched."
Olivia's gasp drowns out Wells's curse, but they're both out of their chairs in the next second. Tears are welling in Olivia's eyes, and Wells looks terrified. Elated, but terrified. Olivia storms around the table and throws herself around Acre's shoulders, tears escaping down her face.
"I told you!"
Acre rubs small, reassuring circles on her back.
"I know you did,"
he says, voice tight.
"You were right all along."
"Right about what?" I ask. She pulls out of Acre's arms and dabs at her eyes.
"About you being his match!"
"She told me when we were children,"
Acre says. I stumble over my words. Wait, you knew me when we were children?"
"I did, yes,"
she says, mellowing some.
"My family is noble, so we spent many summers together when your family came to visit."
"That explains your request for an impromptu dinner date,"
Wells says, finally coming to after the shock of it all and drawing the conversation back to the more pressing matter at hand. He slides back into his chair, eyes jumping between me and Acre.
"I didn't want to risk the news getting out before I'm able to call off my betrothal to Arena, but it's only a matter of time before she hears about my night spent in Jovi's bed."
I stare at Acre in irritation, already knowing there's no stopping the heat from coloring my complexion. Olivia tries and fails to hide her grin. It's the one and only thing I don't miss about court.
Your family is noble, but you are not? Her eyes slide to her husband's. Wells holds out a hand to her, and she walks into his embrace, sitting on his thigh.
Wells is from a merchant family, so our marriage was frowned upon.
Wells glances at Acre, and there's a noticeable unease in the look. Acre releases the tension in his jaw and gives me his undivided attention, dark eyes all the more mesmerizing in the soft light of candles flickering from above.
Wells's lack of material inheritance could have been overlooked if Olivia had awakened, given his magic. Relations between heirs and commoners is considered blasphemous to most within the royal court.
I shake my head. That's absurd.
It is.
Acre agrees.
I've been working with my father's council to advocate for more acceptance of marriages between the gifted and giftless.
How's that been working out for you? Olivia asks, tone dry.
Acre's silence is answer enough. Anyway, here we are, happy and married regardless of those bigots,
Wells says, kissing Olivia's cheek with a flourish.
Mother Nature knew what she was doing when she matched us.
I start. You're matched? Olivia beams as if she's revealing it for the very first time in her life. We are. Looking toward Acre, I debate revealing the book I hid under my mattress, but decide against it. I thought bonds only happened between heirs.
It's what is taught,
Wells says.
And it's why Liv and I keep our bond under wraps. No one knows about it besides Acre and Hallis. And, I suppose, now you.
The implication is clear. I need to keep this secret safe as well.
I was hoping you could share your insight,
Acre says.
There's a lot we don't know about matching bonds.
Olivia and Wells share a look, and it's a full conversation without words. I'm convinced of it. There's a knowing, teasing glint in their eyes that makes me feel like I'm invading their privacy by witnessing it. I look at Acre, thinking he's as uncomfortable as I am, but he's staring at me, unaware of the silent conversation we're not privy to. Well, Olivia says, moving to her own seat once again. What stage of the bonding are you in? Acre and I are equally stumped by the question. You've at least reached a point in the bond where you've both become aware of it, yes? I nod.
Yes.
Acre voices. Okay, so there's always going to be one who accepts the bond before the other. Neither one of us needs to speak because the answer is written in the space between the two of us. Physically and emotionally, there's a clear disconnect. Olivia and Wells have both seen it since our arrival, but it's even more pronounced after Acre's blithe announcement. In our case, Olivia says, placing a gentle hand on her husband's thigh, Wells refused to acknowledge the bond for months and months. It was truly the epitome of stubbornness.
I was a stupid adolescent boy, Liv. You're going to have to forgive me at some point in our lifetime,
he says.
In his defense,
Acre says.
You were pretty terrifying.
Olivia is outraged by the accusation, eyes swinging to me.
Does anything about me scream scary to you?
I smile, because while the answer is no, it is also yes. But I'm obviously going to take her side. Not in the slightest. Olivia looks at them as if to say, see?
Not everyone was born with your assuredness, Liv,
Acre says.
You've got to cut teenage Wells some slack. I once watched him forget how to tie his shoes.
Wells points at Acre.
I was hungover and you know it.
Acre raises his hands in defense.
I'm just saying, I've never had that problem.
Anyway,
Olivia says, getting everyone back on track. With a one-sided acceptance, the bond will force you together. Like the dreams, I say.
Oh, so you're at the beginning,
Wells says.
The beginning?
Acre asks.
Dreams are only the start,
he says.
It's as if the bond refuses to take no for an answer. The dreams will eventually trap you inside them to keep you together, if they haven't tried to already.
I shake my head. A new sensation begins taking root in my chest. Fear, I realize.
They will if you're not careful. It would be impossible to wake you, and it leaves your body vulnerable. It was on day 3 without sleep when my mind left me while I was totally conscious. Hit the ground like a sack of potatoes in the middle of training,
Aker says. Wells smirks, but his words are filled with warning.
I couldn't find my way back for an entire day.
Will the same happen with the mind jumps? I ask. Wells's eyebrows pull together in confusion.
Mind jumps? She means melding, kind of like an oracle,
Aker clarifies.
She can see from my perspective, and sometimes I can see hers. I don't think that's a matching bond thing,
Wells says. Olivia lifts a shoulder. Hard to say. We've only met one other match before, and their experience was similar in a lot of ways, but also different. I think the fact that Wells and I were teenagers played a huge part in it.
No impulse control,
Wells says, making a face. Olivia smiles. Also, we had limited contact with each other due to living so far apart and my parents disapproving of our friendship. You never told them? Her smile turns sad. They disowned me when they realized I wasn't going to awaken. Wells rubs a hand along the length of her back as support, but he doesn't offer any platitudes. I'm sorry, I say, the words feeling inadequate. It's not your fault, she says. Plus, Akers made their stay at the palace as excruciatingly unpalatable as possible. Aker reaches for his wine and takes a drink.
I'll be happier when my father strips them of their titles. Hate to break it to you, but I don't think it'll happen until you're the one sitting on the throne,
Wells says. I lift my brows at the prospect of possibly taking his father's throne, considering something terrible would have to happen for that to ever transpire, and look at Aker to gauge his reaction, but he maintains a mask of passiveness at the prospect. Olivia breaks the moment of disquiet by announcing dessert and returns from the kitchen with a chocolate cake. Wells cuts and serves the slices, declaring it a celebration cake for the happy couple, me and Aker. It's said in jest, but the lack of enthusiasm on my part can't be missed. While I've accepted the truth that Aker is my match, I'm still a ways away from wanting to celebrate it. Not yet, at least. Still, the cake is delicious, and the conversation shifts to easier topics, like what it's like living on the water and what training is like for the guard. They listen and ask questions when I run out of words. Thank you for accepting me into your home, I say when Aker announces our departure. The meal, the company, everything was amazing. We've loved having you, Olivia says, pulling me into another hug. You're welcome anytime. She holds me at arm's length and looks me in the eyes when she repeats the sentiment. Any time. I dip my head in a nod. Thank you.
I'll walk you out,
Wells says, reaching for his shoes. Aker stops him with a hand on his shoulder.
Stay. Keep the floors clean.
Harold is waiting for us with the carriage when we exit. The ride back to the palace is silent, aside from the clattering of wheels against the cobblestone and the horse's hooves. Aker leans against the rear wall of the carriage, elbow propped against the window, running the back of his knuckles across the seam of his mouth. His face is blank, but I see the worry underneath. What are you thinking? He doesn't move, eyes heavy on me as they slide my way.
You don't want this.
My heart skips a beat. I never said I...
You don't have to. I can see it. Bo can see it.
He drops his elbow and stares at me.
And I never wanted to rush you to accept it, but now I'm faced with the reality that I might not be able to keep you safe if you don't.
I can practically feel his turmoil humming through the cabin. I've never felt pressure from you, Aker, and that means more to me than you know. But I can't accept a match who doesn't trust me enough to be honest with me. A crease forms between his brows. You hid the bond from me, your betrothal, and you knew how your people would react to me, yet you let me go in blind. Then I find out Irina is at court? It's my turn to look out the window, not wanting to see the truth in his eyes when I say,
You would never have done those things if you didn't have doubts. The city is cast in shadow, empty, aside from the critters taking advantage of the abandoned streets. I hear him shift in his seat before I feel a feather-light touch at my knee. Looking down, I watch as he slides his fingers forward until they link with mine, pulling my hand into his. I look up and am met with a softer gaze than I've ever seen on his face before.
Know this, Jovi. I have zero doubts when it comes to you. You heard, Olivia, I've always known you were it for me. I may have thought I lost you for a while, but I knew no one would ever take your place.
Bracing his elbows on his knees, he brings my hands to his lips, eyes closing as he holds them there.
I'm sorry I made you doubt me,
he says, eyes staring up at me. I can feel my heartbeat in my throat, and I swallow in an effort to force it down before speaking. Promise me you'll stop keeping things from me.
I promise,
he says, voice low. My chest nearly caves in with my next exhale, and I lean forward to kiss him. He meets my lips with a sweet, melodic pull, his hands holding my face to savor the kiss. It's all-consuming and dizzying in the best way. There's a loud rap on the front of the carriage that breaks us apart.
We're here, my highness.
Acre licks his lips and slides back into his seat, hand still intertwined with mine in my lap.
Thank you, Harold.
I look out the window and see the arching gates to the palace up ahead. It's easier to take in since we're not barging through at breakneck speeds this time, and I'm able to get a clearer view of the cages hanging along the palace walls. I now truly understand that what I thought were animals are not animals at all. They're people. Chapter 49. The next morning, Hallis and I are standing in the middle of the courtyard, waiting for Acre to finish speaking with the commanding officer of the battalion. The group of soldiers I performed warm-up stretches with are now gathered under the arch leading to the palace.